Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now.
Well, all right, Greyhawkians, it's been a hot minute. We took a little vacation, first one ever. We're approaching the three-year anniversary here in a couple of months, and that was our first vacation, so I hope that everybody fared well in our absence. We had good reason. We had a significant holiday in the Christian calendar, also known as Easter. And I was away at GaryCon.
A significant holiday in the D&D calendar.
In the D&D calendar, in the Shire, in the Hobbits calendar. Yeah. So, Mateus, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm caffeinated and played some D&D last night and ready to go.
That's nice.
How about you?
I'm caffeinating as we speak. I'm not quite down to the bottom of the first cup, but it's quickly approaching, and I'm trying out a new mic, so hopefully it sounds okay.
How was your GaryCon? Tell us a little bit about.
So GaryCon was magnificent. It was actually the second weekend of a 2-weekend conglomeration of nerddom in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. The first weekend, of course, Founders and Legends, which was a purposeful celebration of Dungeons and Dragons' 50th anniversary. You know, as it was kind of took on its original, you know, form known as D&D back in 1974 with Arneson and Gygax. And so they did a special weekend, which was kind of loaded with the old school, you know, original kind of crew, those of them who are still among us. Sad news to pass on the week of Founders and Legends, James Ward passed away. So really, really sad there. What a wonderful life and what a wonderful contributor to our hobby, Mr. Ward was. I had the pleasure of meeting him last year at my first GaryCon, and he signed my Dungeons and Dragons or my Deities and Demigods book, and that was very, very special to me. Very cool. So, but yeah, so tough thing to have happened during Founders and Legends, but from what I could tell, everything was really, really great and fun at that weekend. Much smaller group, I think maybe 300 to 400. GaryCon was huge this year because of that 50th anniversary, and Dungeons and Dragons, WotC had a presence there because of announcements and the relationship to, you know, the 50th anniversary and so forth. So folks like Mike Merles, Todd Kenrick was there. I got to fist bump Chris Perkins. That was pretty cool. I'm a fan hobbit at my heart. And I like to get autographs on books, not so I can show them how important I am and wonderful I am, but I like a personal connection with individuals who mean something to me. And so every time I meet one of these creators, I just thank them because of them, I've had hours and hours and hours of enjoyment, escapism. You know, that's why we do this hobby, right? And on top of that, right, I've met so many tremendous good people as a result of being part of D&D, and that for me is why I go to GaryCon, is because of the people. So I got to meet Mike Merles, and he autographed a book I had, and I got to meet Chris Perkins, and I got to reconnect with some folks I met last year with Mr. Greenwood and Todd Stashwick, and the Trollord Games crew was there. You know, foreshadowing on the Wily Hobbit stream, we'll probably see some Castles and Crusades at some point in the future hanging around in Greyhawk. Got to meet the dungeon dudes of Drakenheim. Got to hang out with the creator of Shadowdark, Kelsey Dion. Got to, most importantly, I got to see all my friends from D&D land. I got to meet Armin from New Zealand. He came in for GaryCon. Got to see my buddy Carl Carnage, who plays in a couple of our games on the channel. You know, DM Dave had his whole Tuesday Night Greyhawk crew, you know, Shelley, Ashley, Andy, all in. together. So we got to hang out and play games with them. A particular bucket list for me, got to hang out with my one of my most favorites, creators, Carlos Lysing, Castle Entertainment. He's a friend of the podcast. Got to sit at a table and roll dice with Carlos in Caverick's Cove, at playing Halfling. So,
Awesome.
major afternoon for this old hobbit. Saw Lord Gazumba. So I got to meet Will, William Dvorak, Giant Stomp. That was a real highlight. That was kind of the close of my Gary Con. And I got to sit and watch Ed Greenwood role play Robilar at a table. And talk about D&D Church, man. That's going all the way back. One of the OGs, role playing one of the OGs as a DM in a game, and I got to just sit and absorb that. And so for me, Gary Con is people. Of course, it's gaming. I had the absolute pleasure and honor of. I decided to throw my tunic in the ring, and be an official Gary Con GM. I'm like, imposter syndrome be damned. I'm just doing this. And so I thought, well, 50th year of anniversary, 50th anniversary of D&D, I'm going to run Len Lakofka's Lighthouse as a tribute and memory and a warm, heartfelt thank you to Len. We lost him in 2020, but all the creation he pulled together for us, all the things he shared, and all the just amazing stuff. So I got to do that, and that was really cool, and it went over really well. And the games were fine; it was fine. We had a really good time. So I'm hooked as a Gary Con DM now. I'm going to be doing that every time I go. Got to see Anna Meyer, like I said, Lord Gazumba, Dungeon Dave, all the cool kids. Scottish Jeff was there. Got to see him again. Chad Can Van Vamp Wickman. Got to meet Antiquitas. Just had a great time. Yeah, so anyway, Gary Con, I cannot suggest enough that you try to make it, because it's this mix of really great creators come in. Alan Growe, got to talk with Alan briefly. Got to meet Eric Mona, Ralashaz dude, right, from Lord Gazumba's stream, the Paizo. I almost said Paizon, right? The Paizo, one of the founders, creators of
The
Pathfinder.
Python.
Eric Mona, man. I got to meet Darling Creepshow. Little Bird, a lot of the people in our community, and everybody's just so great. There's no, appearances. There's no, attitude. There's no, I'm awesome and you're just a plebe. It's D&D, man. It's a great weekend, and I cannot say enough. I got to, say hi and shake hands with Luke Gygax to say thanks for all the awesomeness and thanks for putting this on. Thanks for your dad. So, Mateus, we got to get you there, brother.
Oh,
Um,
yeah.
we
Yep.
got to get you there. Missed my friend Chris and Doc Shoulder. I think Doc was at Founders and Legends. Last year we had almost the entire crew together. I got to see Phantom NJ, man, Rob. I got to play at Rob's table. So yeah, really great weekend. So enough about that. I'm gushing. But that for me, that's Gary Con, is I get a chance to look a really great creator in the eye, shake their hand, and tell them thank you
That's
for
awesome.
everything. Because this game, that's what the game is to me. It's not status, it's not likes, it's not clicks, it's not any of that stuff, man. It's just like, holy crap, I can't wait to see you again next year. Yeah, so
Yeah, that's awesome.
awesome. Enough about me.
So, are we talking today about celery?
Celery, or is it key lime pie? Colleen Keats, is it
Kalene?
Kalene Selenium? Isn't that one of the tables of the elements, selenium?
Silly.
Is that where that was from?
That's right.
That's that we're making fun now. All I know, all the grognards are like, ah, what are you saying? Right? You can't
That's
say that
right.
about the great fairy kingdom of Selene.
Celine.
No connection to Celine Dion.
No, that none
Yeah.
whatsoever.
So we're gonna spend our time today talking about Selene. And as much as I love hobbits, and I do, I love elves. Maybe because I'm a hobbit and how Bilbo was about all that and Samwise and stuff. But so we're going to spend our time today talking in depth about elves. One of the things, preparing for this, right, I just go to the well, you go to the Greyhawk Wiki, you go to LGG, Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, you try to find, there's a couple of bell cow websites, if you will, that have some great content, blogs and things, and they all have the same five paragraphs about
That's
Selene.
right.
There's not a large volume of content out there about Selene, which if you're trying to, put like, how are we going to talk for a half hour, 40 minutes about this? But
That's right.
as a DM, that's one of the things I love about Greyhawk, is there's so much unfinished. Like, it's finished, it's complete, there is what there is, but there's so much room for adventure creation and detail that, because as you're going to see here in a minute as we dive in, there's a lot of hooks, there's a lot of really cool history bits, there's three or four just really big pieces of important history that Celine is connected to. And so first thing we should do, though, is, and Mateus promised to wow us with his prowess, profundity, and expertise. I've just charged you with those three things, so you better.
Oh, goodness.
No pressure.
I was just, all right, so.
Let's talk about elves.
Elves. Amongst, I'm not, prowess, expertise, not so much. Basic understanding, absolutely. Amongst the wide variety of elves in the Flannis, there are three, four. There are four main types that we should think about today. You have high elves, gray elves, sylvan elves, and half elves. All right. High elves tend to be a little bit taller, darker hair, and they tend to mingle more with other humans, other species.
They're the least isolationist, I suppose.
The least isolationist, yep. So they're gonna they concentrate mostly in realms like high folk, but they are spread everywhere. So that those are your high elves. Sylvan elves or wood elves, those we understand what those are. They're those the elves who have taken to living in the woods. Half elves, we also know. Elrond, half elven, right? half elves are in Greyhawk are people who have one parent is human, the other is elf, and they kind of display both. Gray elves, the gray elves are called gray elves because their hair tends to be silvery gray, and they are the ones who kind of are isolationists, not so much isolationists as elves are much long, no matter which rule set you're using, elves are much longer lived than humans,
right?
By hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of years. So for elves, time is a small thing, right? Humans, we need to do this now. Elves. And so some of the elves,
yeah, we're a hasty, hurried bunch, not well thought out, shallow thinkers relating to elves because of this
and
time continuum bit. Yeah.
And when the migrations happened, after the twin cataclysms, the elves were here, and their civilization was crumbling at that point. So they had been here and set up kingdoms, and you know, now they were. And so some of these elves, through lore and stories, maybe even memories in your campaign, might long for the glory days. They might long for the days when the elves have kingdoms. And so you see the gray elves have set up two kingdoms in the Flannis. One we covered in a previous episode in Sundi. And here is the other one. And that is in Selene. And so keeping that in mind, that these gray elves tend to be more isolationist, the high elves tend to be more want to commingle with other races, will help when you're trying to figure out what's up with Selene.
So that's got our elves, right? That's a good starting place with elfness. Can we say that? Elfness? Elfdom?
Elfdom.
Let's talk geography real quick. If you look at a map of the Flannis, and I want to give a nod to our good friend Anna Meyer, who creates incredible mappage, cartography, if you will, for Greyhawk and such things. Right in the center, kind of the Flannis, the Sea of Gernot, south of Nirdive, you have the Kingdom of Selene. It's bordered to the west by the Lortmil Mountains, top to bottom. The Kron Hills form the northern boundary The Gnarly Forest is sort of the northeastern boundary. The Whelkwood is also on the east. That goes out to the Wild Coast. So you have like Safeton, Narwhal, you get into Greyhawk, Hardbee, all of that. So there's the Jewel River on the east, is a significant boundary. And then the there's another river. What is it called? Sorry, I just lost it. Don't you hate that? Oh, the Handmaiden River to the west and the south. That's kind of the official where the boundaries lie. Because if you look on the map, it's hard to see like a hard boundary until you look at the red where Anna's got it dialed in. But the Jewel River, the Handmaiden River, the Lort Mills, the Kron Hills kind of form that boundary for the Kingdom of Selene. Its capital is Enstad. According to all of the demographic information available, whether it's LGG or the wiki, about 140,000 souls reside in the kingdom. It's pretty spread out. It's not terribly organized. Again, you got to remember, the first phrase in the history of this on the wiki is since the earliest times. So you're not going to find like any human type organization, political organization. It's really a feudal monarchy, but it's not that organized. And again, with elves, there's one monarch. There's been one monarch. There's only one monarch, and there continues to be one monarch, and it's the same individual since that was established. I think it's interesting to point out, you mentioned the migration. The elves were already here when that happened, because a lot of times I think we think Greyhawk, oh yeah, things kind of got started with the twin cataclysms and the migrations, and that's when the Flaness sort of took form. Well, in human terms, that's pretty fair. But the elves were already here and had been for some time, right? Since the earliest times. And so when the Sewell came trucking through and crossed the Lort Mills, once the elves kind of saw what they were all about, the Sewell got a hard no. No. And in not in a verbal way, right? Like the elves drove them off. Get go away. You're cruel. You're nasty. No, don't want you intermingling. However, the other human races, the elves didn't have such a difficult time, right? And that's where that sort of comminglement began to happen. And this goes back, 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 back. We were talking before we started. You mentioned an alliance, Mateus, with the Kingdom of Selene and Kielland, which is interesting. Because we think now in modern Greyhawk, we think of Selene as this standoffish, isolated sort of situation that's not tied to anything. But there's actually history where the Kingdom of Selene was allied with the rulers of Kioland way back in the early years
There we go.
of, the early CY
Yeah.
time.
Yeah. And we have to remember that Kielland is not a monarchy, like an absolute monarchy. Kielland is run by a council.
Right.
And each, it's a confederation of smaller nobles and states who send their representatives to the council to vote. So when LGG says that Selene offered their allegiance to the rulers of Kielland for many centuries, I understand that. I can't find a date when that began. If somebody in the audience can find a date when that began or suggest one, I suggest it probably occurred when the Ulek states joined too.
Could be
And
that
the,
whole region, the Scheldamar Valley. Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
the Ulek, the Ulek, the peers of Ulek joined the Council of Nealdra in 292 CY. So I suggest that that's a good date as any. Because they all leave together, or that they all they leave, the demi-human Ulek states leave at the same time. And but so that means from at least I'm suggesting from 292 until 461 CY. The Selene was part of Keoland, and they sent representatives to the Council of Nealdra. If I'm wrong, I that's how I read it, but I could be wrong on this
Are
reading.
you in the LGG?
Yeah, well.
Let me look, because I just was looking through the wiki, and in the wiki it's 361. They expelled the Keolandish,
Yes, that is a
emissaries,
mistake.
whatever you want to call
That
them,
is that's a mistake.
garrisons.
I'm pretty sure that's a mistake. Oh, I
So, because the wiki has Selene established in 361 when they cut ties with Keoland.
All right, you're making me work.
So now, yeah, I'm clicking and dragging too. I'm like scrambling. Now I want to see what LGG says.
Okay, LGG says LGG the de I remember this. This is a discrepancy in LGG. If you go back to the box set, let's open up your box set. I've got my box set here somewhere. If you open up your box set and you look at the timeline, the demi-human states of Ulek depart in 461 CY, and LGG has it as 361 as a mistake.
Interesting.
I'm almost certain that is the
Maybe Selene departed a century earlier. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
no, it's because it's in the Ulek states as well. I'm pretty sure I read this. I'm just grabbing my loading up my PDF here of the this is top quality top quality radio here.
Oh, push it off.
Ladies and
Yeah, we're
gentlemen.
learning on the fly sometimes. That's all good, brother.
All right, here we go. This is all right. I've got my handy dandy guide to the World of Greyhawk fantasy setting.
Excuse me.
And where is the timeline? Here it is. Timeline 461 on page 9 of the box set.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
Demi-human Ulek's realms of Ulek and Selene are affected, means they leave.
Four
Now let's
six one. Yeah.
461. Now let's go to
Excuse me.
LGG and check out Ulek.
356, Kingdom of Keoland at peak. Right? So interesting, in the LGG and the wiki, they're saying 361 is when
Yes,
Keoland expels
that's
the royal, or Selene expels the royal garrisons. And
yes, that's
before that, it says, together with the neighboring Ulek provinces, Selene
yep.
expelled Keolan's royal garrisons in
Yep.
361.
Yes. So
So we have a discrepancy.
I think the discrepancy is not the fault of the person who wrote the wiki, because I don't think if you would have known. Now I'm going to double check this here. I'm in the county duchy. Where does it give me
But yeah, you're right on the timeline. CY4. 6-1, demi-human realms of Ulek and Selene are affected.
Yes, and if I'm right, yes, okay, so let's see. There's got to be a date in here somewhere. Over history, migrations. Okay, here we go. The Wheel Sun Proclamation.
Yeah, and that, for listeners, right, the Wheel Sun Proclamation is when the Kiyosh King Tavish II tried to assert manifest destiny of Keoland over all of the Sheldamar Valley, and that took a little time to manifest. And by 461, according to the box set, the demi-human kingdoms of the Ulek provinces and Selene, cut ties. According
Yes.
to the wiki and LGG, it was 361 CY.
Yes,
So we've
and
got
that's it.
ourselves a good old-fashioned conundrum.
Yes, I think that's just a mis mistake, like a misprint,
Typo or something. Yeah.
something. It's easy to do 461 and 3. Anyway,
But at any rate.
what anyway? So in the what I think this, let's summarize here. At some point, Keoland Keoland, the Council of Keoland included the demi-human Ulek states and Selene. They were part. That's what allegiance means here. I don't think it just means in and so then things change during the imperial reign of the Tavishes,
right?
And the demi-human Ulek states cede, and then on top of that, Selene decides that they need a leader. They need someone to. They need someone to take the lead, and so they find a princess.
Yes, they do.
Princess Yolanda. Yolanda.
Yeah,
I would say Yolanda, but yeah, we'll go with that. She's no girly noble, you know. She's
she's a wizard of the highest accomplishment, and a fighter.
Yep, a fighter.
And it's funny because she came to the front by organizing the defenses of Selene, to break away from Keoland, because this wasn't just a diplomatic proclamation. Tavish brought in armies to assert Manifest Destiny and annex the Pomarj from, Ulek, into Veluna. And that's what got everybody in the demihuman states up like, wait a minute, what are we doing? So they had to meet force with force. And for Selene, this Princess Yolande was the one who organized the defenses.
That's right. And then through a series of battles, they obviously maintain their independence. And if you take what I'm saying, they can, if you view them as independent. It doesn't really make sense that they were independent beforehand, because why wouldn't they have a queen beforehand? Why do they need to make a queen if they were not? So it seems more likely that they were part of Keoland, become independent.
I wonder too, Matt, if they decided to go the monarch route to clearly establish themselves in the context of the rest of the Flaness and Orth, what was happening with all of these kingdoms, organizing and so forth. Because before, they were just the elves living in Selene. And
that's right.
Humans came along and had to organize things and be hasty and create boundaries and proclamations. And so I wonder if that's part of why they felt compelled to, outwardly establish themselves as an entity, a political organization, if you will.
Yeah.
Hey, we need a queen.
And so this queen is given, she has a consort, Triseron.
Yep.
And just consider for a moment, this is a footnote, Yolanda in the 360s up to the, when the Wheelsun proclamation, and then up until 461, when the demi-human Ulek states break away, she's been, it's, whatever your campaign is, 576, 591, 600, she's still queen. Elves live a long time. I think AD&D says they can live up to 2,000 years, though I might be wrong. Anyway, so she has a consort, and he together with them, they're able to, they're able to beat the Kyoish. But LGG notes that the Kyo, with the break from Keoland, guess what happens? The orcs
and the non-humans
the humanoids, the Kyoish patrols had been keeping the humanoids in the Lortmills in check. This kind of gives you a reason as to why Selene probably joined Ulek in Keoland in the first place. They probably liked the fact that these humans kept the humanoids, the goblins and bugbears and all this kind of stuff, in the mountains away from them. And so now that that's gone, the Kyush forces are not going to protect the Lort Mills anymore.
That's right.
Things get
Certainly not
bad.
in the direction of Celine.
That's right. Things kind of get a little more. There seems to be, it says there seems to be no end to the hordes that spewed from the mountains, right?
Spewed. Yeah, I love that.
And throughout this, this is a key point. Every time Celine has had to defend itself, it costs them dearly.
Right.
And if
In
you,
lives.
and because they are so long-lived, they reproduce slower than other species. So every life matters. Every life counts.
Yeah. And here's, let's put that in terms of numbers real quick. Because I mentioned at the start 140,000 souls in Selene. That's the 591 CY population. In at the time of the 1983, the box set, which is looking at Selene more historically. I'm not sure that, I guess it'd be like what, 576? Would that be
Five
right?
seven, yep, 576, and the numbers there will tell you how many fighting males are available.
Okay, so they list a population of 20,000, gray elves 9,500, sylvan elves 8,000, gnomes 13,500, halflings, no number. But so whatever the numbers are, obviously if it's just fighting males, so there may be 50 to 60,000 individuals living in Selene if you consider family units and so forth. That's still a big jump between 576 and 576 and 591. However, that's a period of time where humans, there are humans in Selene.
10% of the
And
population.
yeah, and so a number of humans came in, and it's I don't remember which publication I read it in, but it notes that a lot of those individuals are in the military,
Yep,
which
that's
tells
right.
me maybe that was their purpose. So conscripts, if you will, or just people sympathetic to the elves and their plight over the centuries. But
That's
yeah,
right.
the whole orcish thing was a big. A big deal.
And
The
it and
elves had to combine with gnomes, and other folks from Ulek to repel these orc invasions. The weather breaks in the spring. Here come the doggone orcs down out of the Lort Mills.
that's right.
And
And what does this lead to?
this leads to the Hateful Wars. The prince consort is killed near Cowerwood, coming back from Ulek. And so, a grievous blow to the heart of our Queen Yolande. And so the Hateful Wars.
Yep, and that's
Okay,
from
enough with the
498 to
orcs.
510. Yep.
Yeah. And that really put a stop to the orc situation. Yeah. So
Yep. And
that's a big moment.
then after
The elves
that,
were killed. Yeah.
and so they clear the Lort Mills
Yeah.
of all of the demi-humans. And what happens? They go and invade the Bomarge.
They take the Pomarge from the Ulek print. Yeah,
Yep.
yeah.
But at that point, Selene has paid dearly in blood. And the queen has lost her consort. So she's like, that's it. I'm done. I'm done fighting. I am done fighting humanity's wars.
Yeah, that was an important thing I thought too. Yeah, she says that literally. I no longer wish to have a part in human wars. And that's the beginning of the isolationism seems like such a cold, negative connotation, but that's when the elves of Selene decided to tighten their borders and tend to their own matters only.
And yet, LGG says it's not like she doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, I
Cause
thought that
she,
was pretty cool.
so she, so she's keeping tabs. She's keeping tabs on Ayus. She's keeping tabs on, they probably she probably has spies, and a way to get information. maybe something magical. You never know. But she has a way to know what's going on, and she's not fazed by it. And so the Greyhawk Wars come, and she does nothing. She sits by, and her former allies in the dwarves in the I think it's dwarves in the Principality of Ulek, they ask for aid against from the orcs from the Pomarge, and Yolanda basically says, you know what, elves' lives. I'm not giving any more lives for this. But this involvement, this policy is different from the policy of the Yolanda's chief, Celine's chief defense force. What is the chief defense force in Celine?
Well, they have, you know, they have companies of elven military and groups, but there are what ends up happening is some folks form other, you know, people who would like to see the Kingdom of Selene be a greater participant in the affairs of the world, if you will. And so some factions form.
Yep.
And probably the most well-known, there's a standing military with, you know, elven infantry. There's this elite hippogriff cavalry.
That's right.
But what ends up happening in the Companion Guard, which is sort of the city of Enstead, the capital.
Yep.
But this group called the Knights of Luna.
Yep. They're specifically charged with defending Selene's borders.
Yes. They typically could be found out in the Whelkwood or the Sus Forest, but they're the ones out there closer to the outside world, and they see it firsthand. And so this Knights of Luna, and we're going to go down a little rabbit hole. We're going to follow the breadcrumbs here. Becomes a dissenting group. They would like to see Selene take a greater role in the affairs of the greater world.
What type of elves? What's the makeup?
So the Knights of Luna, you must be of elvish stock. High elves and half elves make up the Knights of Luna. And there is a page in the wiki for this, and there's an entry in the back of the LGG for this. So about 200 knights. They must have elven or half elven heritage,
and they're mostly high elves, and that's important.
High elves. Yep.
Because remember, high elves are the ones who want who are the most likely to want to cooperate with other races,
right? Yeah, versus gray elves. Yeah.
And and if you look at the population of Selene, there's not a lot of high elves. It lists how many high elves. It lists that most of the population are 55% gray elves and 45% sylvan. So high elves are not even listed. So most
half
of the
elves,
high elves.
5%. Yeah. So this is a small group.
So most of the high elves are going to be in this region are going to be in the Knights of Luna.
Right.
That's what I take.
And they actually, some of them don't even live in Selene. They live in the Gnarly, the Sus, the Whelkwood. So mm-hmm. They're interacting. They're not just border patrol. They're interacting. And the most fun thing I thought was kind of cool was the founder of the Knights of Luna is none other than Melf, Prince Brightflame himself, the founder and the leader. Again, mm-hmm. Elves live a long time. He's still the leader of the Knights of Luna. And what's cool about Melf? Of course, you all know what's cool about Melf because you're fans of Greyhawk. If you happen to be newer to the setting in the game, Melf is actually a player character played by Gary Gygax's son, Luke. Mm-hmm. And has he is Melf of Melf's Acid Arrow. And he will occasionally make an appearance here and there in the present day on like maybe Lord Gazumba's stream. But yeah, so Melf, and there's a wiki page for Melf, in and around this kind of 576, 591 window, he's about 200 years old. There's a good description, right? 5'8", 147, kind of changes his appearance. He's a fighter 13 and a wizard 12. Has ties, an ally of Mordenkainen, however you like to say that, part of the Citadel of Eight. He's a worshiper of Ferlangen, the Wanderer, so it kind of makes sense from a kind of a ranger perspective, and also a cousin of Queen Yolande. which is interesting because he is in opposition to this policy that the elves of Selene have established of isolation from the rest of the world. Stories about him fighting with Prince Korond of the Principality of Ulek in 586 to regain, you know, lands lost to the Pomarge. So very, very interesting Greyhawk history, Selene history, but also very interesting D&D history because of Melf, the, you know, character of Luke Gygax. Very, very cool. Was in Gary's campaign when Luke was a boy.
And here's the other neat thing. Here's the thing. There's some people in this Knights of Luna who actually seek to gain control of Selene's military. Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
Melf being Melf might act, the way you could play this up, Melf might even have a claim on the throne. He's a cousin.
Cousin of the queen, yeah.
Melf is. So here, let's get into briefly what we can, how why we would play a game here. What adventure hooks? Here's that. That's one. Is that the Knights of Luna? You could easily play a campaign where you're part of the Knights of Luna, you're fighting borders. You're fighting orcs in the south, you know, Ayus in the north. You know, this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Supporting where humans need support. Yeah.
Yep. What other reasons or adventure hooks? Why would we want to play a game here in this isolationist kind of land? That's a question. I mean, you could have the growing Pomarge a problem. What, you know, ask yourself, what would break Yolanda out of her isolationism? What is that? What is that thing that would do it? And then build a campaign around it.
Right. Yeah.
The Knights of Luna find it.
A little political intrigue from inside to kind of usurp her power. And even says in the LGG, one of the things I love about the LGG is they leave you with a couple of little adventure hooks at the back of each regional description. Conflicts and intrigues, they call it. Right. Evil non-humans from the Pomarge remain a constant threat. There's an adventure hook. There's a campaign all of itself, because that's not only an interest of the Knights of Luna, but it's a common interest they have with the militia of Selene, right? The defense of the homeland.
Yep.
Border disputes with Greyhawk. So now we enter into politics and things. Mm-hmm. Members of the Knights of Luna, as you said, seeking to gain control of the Selene military. And there's your entry point for that, you know, change in leadership, perhaps. The royal consort entering the Moon Arch of Saanine has not returned. What happened there? Let's find out. There's a great adventure. So there's all sorts of things. And even says in the tail end of the description of the Kingdom of Selene that some Selenese find fault with the queen's policies, but they're not ready to turn from her because of her past greatness and how she led Selene into its current state of independence. So there is lots of opportunity. Plus, let's remember, this is a Fey kingdom. So you have entirety of Feywild, things that you can tie to this.
Yep, that's right.
And that's no small bucket of fun right there.
Just put your wild, your witch light here.
Yeah, yep. I mean, yeah. So, and it, you know, because it's elves, it lends itself to numerous rule sets, all the D&D rule sets, editions, CNC, you could set a Shadow Dark game in a dark corner of a forest if you wanted, and play with Celine. So, all in all, as little, volume wise, as little information as there is with Celine, man, what there is really rich.
It's really
You could go
great.
back
Yep.
in time and play out the Keoland. Set your game in 461 or 348 when the proclamation, the Wheel Sun Proclamation, was issued by Tavish II. There's not a lot of detail, but what there is very, very interesting, rich, and really a big, a big part of Greyhawk history. That rift with Keoland, the Hateful Wars, the establishment of the Pomarge, the refusal to assist in the Greyhawk Wars. It's really rife with opportunities
Right.
as a DM,
Yeah.
as a player. If you play an elf, you may be from Highfolk, Valuna, Celine. You play a
Our good
character.
friend, Samwise,
Yes.
has suggested 319, instead of for when Celine enters into Keoland.
For
So
like the
there you go.
official allegiance participation on the council. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
very fuzzy. Some sites, some sources cite centuries of allegiance. And that allegiance, they use the word allegiance. It could start with we helped you on a thing and we did some trade. And we, and over the centuries of that allegiance, and I'm using my air quotes, ultimately in the early 300 CY, that turned into a seat on the council in Keoland, which was very quickly eroded by this CY 348 Wheel Sun Proclamation by Tavish II. And so the rest we've already discussed. So,
That's right.
yeah. So at the end of the day, Celine, don't let its darkness or lack of volume of detail keep you from playing there. Don't let the elves keep you out. So, because there's lots of
Right.
cool stuff there. So, 12 out of 10 recommend as a friend of the elves. I love it. And it was really fun learning about it. I
Yes,
think it's kind
absolutely.
of fun that we had to stumble around and look like buffoons while we figured out what the years actually are, only to discover there's just a discrepancy, which
That's right.
could be as simple as a typo. So that was kind of fun. But yeah, so check out Celine. Future stuff, we're gonna revisit with Les. We're gonna go back into the vault, if you will, of the Appendix N influences on D&D and Gygaxian writing. That's coming up, another installment of that. We'll probably have some other interviews. It's probably soon we need to think about chasing down Castle Entertainment and talking a little bit about what he has going on. So yeah. So all in all, lots to come here on Greyhawk. Matthias, any final commentary from you, sir?
No, stay cool, and we'll see you all next time.
Yes. Please be safe, be kind out there, and we will see you as we encounter you on the paths and the hills and dales of the Flaness. Be well.
You've been listening to the Greycast Podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Matthias and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. Find our podcast on Spotify and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.